very happy birthday to Lindsay Faye. Happy birthday, Lindsay, from all of us here at the Baker Street Babes.
If you would like to sponsor an episode of the Baker Street Babes so that we can keep doing what we love, which is bringing lots of neat things to you, please email us at info@bakerstreetbabes.com. And whether you are a longtime listener or a first-time listener or somewhere in between, thank you for inviting us into your internets and into your ears. We made this for you.
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1 be mine?
I would make you intro, but that would probably be a little weird.
It would be awkward.
Okay.
Welcome. So, but you should include that. Like,
yes.
It'll be awkward.
Yes. Say it. All right. We are the Baker Street Babes live and local, and we are here with...
Eleanor.
Sarah.
Amy. And we are interviewing one of our most special guests of all time, the amazing Lindsay Faye, about...
The Whole Art of Detection, Lost Mysteries of Sherlock Holmes by Lindsay Faye. And thank you very much for interviewing me. I love this. This is so
Thank you for coming. Mm-hmm. We wanted to talk to Lindsay about this absolutely groundbreaking, amazing collection of short stories. And Eleanor is joining us because she is a fantastic Sherlockian and knows a lot about Lindsay's work as well.
We should ask Eleanor all the questions.
No, because I'm not being interviewed. So
yeah, but like, I'm already a Baker Street Babe. So like, if we ask you the questions,
We will. Okay.
Yeah.
We are gonna. Yes. Then we are going to ask the honorary babe questions to Eleanor so that she can.
Yes.
So that I can participate in the interview.
Exactly. So that you qualify to like talk to me.
Okay. I mean, she's already a babe. Like, there's no question that she is
Huge
a babe.
Yeah.
But you know, there's going to be even more honorary babes. All right. So our first question is, how did you first get into Sherlock Holmes?
I read the books as a youth. And I remember carrying around a Doubleday, like, in middle school. And it had stickers on the cover. I'd put stickers on it. Anyway.
So then I watched the Robert Downey Jr. movies. And I was in the mood for a new fandom at the time. And that was the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite canonical character?
Watson.
Yay!
She has a
class. Everyone approves.
They can't see it, but she has a Watsonian like banner thing on her badge right now.
I am a member of the John H. Watson Society. The
Which
appreciation
is your...
of.
Oh yes, yes, you are.
Watsonians.
You're a founding member.
Yes. Which is your favorite case?
Silver Blades. Why?
Because the horse did it. And it's very cheeky to name the mystery after the solution.
Kind of a question that we always ask is, who would you want to have tea with from the canon? And that doesn't have to be...
That's not your favorite character.
Your favorite character. Who would you want to, like, dish with?
Still Watson. I want to get those unfinished cases out of him.
The giant rat.
The secrets.
You want to pry open
I want to peek behind that curtain.
Well, yeah, we should mention that you are an author and you write about things behind the curtain. Talk about that for a second.
Well, yes, I write erotic queer Holmes pastiches of various kinds, fan fiction and pastiche. So I love peeking under that curtain and under those skirts and inside the waistcoats and behind the drawers.
Up the trouser legs. Oh my
under
god.
Under the bed and fly on the wall.
Well, thank you for joining us. You are an honorary Baker Street Babe.
Yay!
Thank you for letting me ambush Lindsay. Yes, we should say this is an ambush. Lindsay was not expecting this.
I was not.
We are putting her on the spot. All right, so let's first ask you to talk about what the book is. I mean, we know, but for the sake of people who may not have seen it yet.
It's a hardback.
It's a beautiful
I have a soft cover.
Oh, wow.
The book is essentially what happened after I wrote my first Sherlock Holmes story. So when I first embarked on this in any sort of professional fashion, I wrote Dust and Shadow. And very flatteringly, almost immediately, somebody said, hey, could you write a short story for our anthology? Mm-hmm. And then I started being asked by The Strand, hey, mm-hmm. could you possibly write a mystery for our next issue? Could it be a Sherlock Holmes mystery? Could you do another Sherlock Holmes mm-hmm. pastiche? Could you do another one and another one? And by the time this book, was possible, I had apparently written 13 Sherlock Holmes mysteries. And I wrote two new ones, specifically just to appeal to people who had, never necessarily... I wanted it to be fair, because I'm like, okay, so this is a book. So I'm going to write two more cases, and they're going to be ones that you've never seen before. Mm-hmm. Even if you have followed the contents of The Strand magazine. And
one of these is for a BSI manuscript book.
That is correct. And one of them is also for an Emek publishing book. And one of them is also for a Sherlock Holmes in America mm-hmm. anthology. So mm-hmm. yeah, they come from various places, mm-hmm. but 10 of them come from The Strand.
Now, did you have a plan for the arrangement of these before you wrote the extra ones? Had you, laid them out in advance and said, oh, I see where they all fit? Or are you just like, I have some new ideas?
I looked at them very carefully, and I decided that I had not written enough in the later years. Mm-hmm. And I needed to write more about what they were doing later, post-Reichenbach, after everything had sort of, been settled. And I had written four from the early years. I really wanted to write later content, and that was what I found was lacking in my own, production, because I was like, okay, I have written a lot about mm-hmm. these gentlemen and their friendship, and I haven't quite, achieved the 1902 sort of story. And so I wrote the two new ones, I think, are both...
Mm-hmm. We should say, for people who haven't seen it, it is organized by a chronological order, and yes. That's awesome because you hit literally every time period. There's not an absent time period in their friendship and in life, so that's a really fun thing, I think. Do you find, though, you said you'd noticed that you hadn't written as much in the later years, is that a conscious thing, that you feel you're more drawn to writing about the early years?
I'm more drawn to writing about the relationship than I am drawn to writing about the case. So mm-hmm. I start off generally with what can make these people talk to each other about something that's actually important. And then creating a case around that is really interesting to me. So I think that the early years and the sort of everything surrounding Reichenbach and oh my God, you were dead. Why?
Why did you do that to me?
Why did you do that to me? I find that to be a really interesting question. And so I like going back to that, and I like creating cases around it because of the fact that it makes them talk to each other about things that have to do with the greatest literary friendship of mm-hmm. all time. And I really... have a hard time with the later years generally, just because of the fact that there's the stakes are kind of lowered. Mm-hmm. They now have gotten past it. They've apologized. They know each other right. to a certain extent. So yeah, it's just about character development and how much I can crack open mm-hmm. the people and make them talk to each other.
Yes, we could probably feel a little more sorry for Doyle, because most people think his later stories are not as good, and I think that is part of the reason
it's having to do with that lowered intensity. Yeah, it's much more difficult. The stakes are different. Mm-hmm. The stakes are not the same as, whoops, I died.
Sorry. I've known you for 3 years, and what are you doing with that hatchet?
Yes, how's that going? how is that going?
You've introduced...
Kind of a related question, I think. Since these were all written over a a span of time, 4 different publications that had different constraints and ideas that they wanted you to work with. Once you started going back over them, was there anything else that emerged as something that, like, I've been doing this for all these years and wasn't thinking about, or you were thinking about?
Sarah, this is an amazing question, and part of the reason this is an amazing question is that the Strand magazine had basically, you're going to stop at 5,000 words. And I was like, okay.
Am I really?
So I tried very hard, and most of the time I was at, you know, somewhere around 550. But the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, traditionally, mm-hmm. if you want to make them actually mm-hmm. sound like a Sherlock Holmes mystery, they land at 7,000 or 8,000 mm-hmm. words, which is, you know, like almost double what I was doing for the Strand. I know my math is bad, but like,
it's like, 1.5.
It's 1.5. And it's like a lot of atmosphere, and it's a lot of just mm-hmm. sitting at Baker Street and Holmes being like, I'm staring at you in the reflection of a coffee pot. and I'm just gonna deduce you, you know.
There's
from
a lot
over
more
here.
Action in your stories. In the original Sherlock Holmes stories, there's all of that, like sitting and listening and hearing somebody yes. tell a story about something that happened to them, and then maybe there's a venturing out of the story. But you
exactly.
Can, you don't have time
but I was physically
to sit and listen.
I was unable to do that because right. I had to do the entire piece in 5,000 words when I was writing the ones for the Strand, and that's 10 of them. So it was like, okay, I'm going to arrive at the case as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no sort of like Baker Street introduction.
That's not true. There's lots of Baker Street introductions.
No, but I added them back in. So that was what Sarah was asking, is that in the whole art detection, this short story collection is not the stories I wrote for the Strand. I took all of them and I added it all back in. So I wrote 40,000 words of the whole art detection.
Baker Street time.
Yeah, like added into the short stories that I had already written. But like,
that's why they feel so genuine.
I had written them, and then I was like, okay, they're all too short. And so I looked at them, and I was just like, they're too short. This is the only thing. And it's not the fault of Strand magazine. It's a stupidly beautiful, glossy magazine. But I was just like, they're too short. And so I added back in the beginning and you know, like middle bits and the end. Like all of
the denouement, you actually, solve mystery, like, goodbye.
So none of the stories in the whole art of detection are the same as anybody would have read them in the Strand or would have read them in any other anthology. I just added a bunch of words to them, and that sounds trivial, but it's not in a Sherlock Holmes mystery, because so much of it is about atmosphere, and so much of it is about just them, you know, like hanging out and chilling and being domestic, and you know, like so much of it is about friendship. And I don't regret having written the shorter versions, but the ones in Whole Art of Detection are completely different.
And that is fascinating.
Follow up to that one. do you find, other than feeling like you're missing those lovely intro bits where they just kind of hang out, do you find that those space constraints have any other effect on you as a writer, making you more efficient in a good way?
Yes.
Or?
Well, definitely. I mean, I always tell people, if you're not talented enough to be a poet, then write short stories. And if you're not talented enough to write short stories, then write novels. Yes, I really do enjoy the extra space. Yeah, it was something where I had to sort of hone straight into the clues, you know, and like those are difficult. I feel like I admire the creators of BBC Sherlock for completely different reasons, but they have managed to create a story where they're like, okay, so like, it's a clue, he's going to make a deduction, and then they just make like a like explosion, and like, I hope this comes across on like, I'm
gesturing for radio, and it doesn't work.
Like, boom!
You're making explosion
motions. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, don't gesture for radio, ever. But it is really interesting when you can just take something and do it in a visual way, right? And they have these clues where Sherlock is all very hyper-produced, and it looks shiny and neat. And I sit down, and every time I'm trying to write one of these, it's very much set in the Victorian era, and it's very much trying to be based in, like, actual real stuff. And I'm trying to write real clues, and it's hard. And I just feel terrible for Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, having written 60 of them. I've only written 15, but I just feel terrible for him having done 60, because that's a lot. And, like, it is tricky. It is really tricky to sit down and try to, you know, like, piece together what you have to take a combination of what people looked like, what they sounded like, what they acted like, what they smelled like, what they felt like, what they acted like, and then put it all together. And then Sherlock Holmes figures out that something is amiss. And it's tricky.
Oh, there is a specific area in which I think you are far, far better than Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and that is in Sherlock Holmes' perspective.
Oh,
which you do. I realize for many people, those are some of their least favorite canonical stories.
Oh, you mean the Lion's Mane?
I was about to say that my favorites in here are the ones that are Holmes' journal ones.
Well, he's a nerd.
I love that one. He's so whiny, and it just touches my heart. He's just I love him.
It's a different perspective.
I love him.
Sorry, Amy. Yeah.
Oh, no. That was the question. I was just going to say, elaborate on that. Your choice to...
So you've got the Blanche Soldier, and you've got the Lion's Mane, right? And so these are very self-conscious Sherlock Holmes. I'm writing as Sherlock Holmes. So I am aware that I am Sherlock Holmes.
And
I'm going to publish this story. This is not what I did. Mm-hmm. But I figured that it was canonical. I sort of theorized to myself, hey... So, if Sherlock Holmes published two stories, he definitely must have kept a journal. And then I wrote two from it. Yeah,
just these two stories that Holmes writes, in that they are just journal entries, and so they are so genuine. And
I was like, I could do real Sherlock Holmes instead of like Sherlock Holmes thinking to himself.
Right.
Consciously,
people are going to read this.
And I think that's actually one of the problems with those stories is that it's so, like,
he's like, I have
meta.
To write it better than Watson writes it. I have to do a gooder job than John
A gooder
does.
Job, exactly. So, I have to do the goodest job
ever.
And then after Sherlock Holmes says, I have to do the goodest job ever, of course you're not going to do the goodest job ever, because you have officially told yourself you have to do that. Like, instead of being, like, yourself and a real person.
It's just so genuine and so earnest and so
nerdy.
So nerdy! Mrs. Hudson is finally retired after accusing me of pining.
Yes.
But I am pondering, not pining.
It's my job.
There's
so
great humorous moments throughout.
Well, I think that Sherlock Holmes and John Watson also, like, John Watson is able to make jokes about Sherlock Holmes throughout the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, and this is one of the best things about them, is that he's very humorous about it, and he's like, okay, not only am I aware of the fact that I'm being published in The Strand, and that I am the biographer of the most amazing human I've ever met, but I also am gonna occasionally make jokes about it, because this is kind of funny. And I think Sherlock Holmes seems like, in a lot of the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle stories, like, he's kind of taking it seriously, but then he has these sly winks and nods. And what I was trying to capture in the journal entry style parts of the book, which is only two stories, but I was sort of trying to capture the fact that he gets it. He gets the joke.
Yeah. What I love about them is how that you like you were saying in a panel earlier, that, like, so many adaptations take certain elements of Holmes and he becomes kind of this hardened, like, diamond of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And really what he is a man who giggles and squirms in his chair and loves practical jokes.
He squirms in his chair a lot.
And he knows how to laugh, and he knows how to laugh at himself.
Yeah.
And he cares about his clients. He's kind. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, really comes out in those stories in particular, but also in the rest of these stories, which are all amazing.
Those things are very important to me.
And I think that, like, they're not necessarily important in every adaptation if you're watching, like, an on-screen adaptation, but I do think they're very important mm-hmm. if you're writing a short story or if you're writing a novel mm-hmm. about Sherlock Holmes, because you're going to miss the entire point of the guy if you turn him into, like you just said, a hardened sort of, like, this is a diamond of a man, and he's got all sharp edges, and that's it. And that's not true.
He's graphic.
Yeah.
Well, I think there are people who write some people who are very traditionalist, not everybody by any means, who they miss the unreliable narration aspect, and by that I mean intentional unreliable narration.
Yeah,
of people who are like saying, Watson says Holmes is an unfeeling machine, therefore I will write Sherlock Holmes as I don't know, as a reviewer,
it's deeply wrong.
Those are difficult to read because you say, I get what you're doing. I get, you know, you're telling me
the
giant rat of Sumatra story. You know, you're doing a very faithful pastiche, but I am not feeling the warmth that I feel through the canon and through your stories also.
People wouldn't keep reading them if they weren't. I mean, like, I always tell people, like, so it's very important at the beginning when you start reading the Sherlock Holmes mysteries. Yes, you want to read the end of the tale, and you want to figure out the solution to the crime. And you've got all the clues in front of you, and you're like, well, not all of them necessarily, they don't always play fair entirely, but you're like, okay, so here's a bunch of clues, and I would like to know the solution to the mystery. That's why you read them the first time. Then there are the people who never stop reading them, ever. And that is what happened to me, was that I never stopped reading them. And you don't continue to read them over and over and over again unless it is a beautiful relationship and you're looking at that instead of always looking at the solution to the mystery, because the solution to the mystery, now you know it, but you're still at Baker Street and Sherlock Holmes is still deducing Watson from a reflection in a coffee pot, and that's still funny and it's still warm yeah. and it's still like a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as much as anybody could possibly want to be a character, I have always wanted to be John Watson. I wanted to have that friend who was brilliant and was a genius. And I sat there and I had the gun and I could help.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like my whole thing. So I don't know, like that is what happens to people when they read them over and over again. And there are people who read them over and over again for, of course, any number of different reasons. But sure. That's why I read them over and over again.
I think that's right. I mean, I think even when you look at more procedural adaptations, like thinking about House or Elementary, that both mm-hmm. have strong procedural aspects, a lot of the fans, what they're still connecting with is friendship aspects. And it's like yeah. in the end, years later, what I see is still people talking about House and Wilson.
Yeah.
Rather than, I mean, there might be a few standout cases, but they're not generally pointing at, ooh, that one case, that one time. It's more like these guys and that one interaction and that one time when they had this discussion. And I think similarly with Elementary, I see a lot of people who are invested in that friendship and that.
It's a great relationship. They do it really well on Elementary and on House.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even in those procedurals, many people are watching it for those little moments of like, friendship and humanity.
And then they're watching it again because they can see that part again. And you don't need to learn the solution to the crime twice, but you do need to see that friendship element again.
Many of these, maybe all of them, are based on untold stories. Is that true?
Yeah.
So you start with that reference, and you've got to come up with a story that fits into an untold story reference. But then do you start with the solution, or do you just start writing and hope you'll get there eventually? How do you approach writing a short story like this? Get a good mystery out of it.
This is a really good question. With Sherlock Holmes stories, you actually have to start with the solution. Otherwise, you cannot get anywhere. You can try to figure out who done it in a novel as you get there. In a short story, you really can't. So you have to have the hat trick from the beginning. And you have to say to yourself, okay, this is the Sherlock Holmes story that I think I want to approach.
And in my case, I always sort of come at it from an angle of, I would like to explore this aspect of Holmes and Watson's relationships, therefore I have chosen this particular time period and this particular short story. And then after you've chosen that, you definitely need to have a solution in mind. And then just go backwards and like create all the clues that could get you there. So it's almost like it's a Mobius strip of writing. Mm-hmm. So you have the beginning because you have the impetus and you have the short story that you want to fill in. That's the blank. And you're like, okay, I've never done this, for instance. So I'm going to bring this up as an example. I've never done The Politician, The Lighthouse, and The Trained Cormorant. So you come up with that, and then you're like, okay, I'm going to do this one. But then you get the solution to the problem, and then you work backward. And it's very important to be able to do that, because I think otherwise the clues would not make any sense at all. They would just be random. Mm-hmm. Random acts of like, look, you're wearing a tweed. And it's like, yes.
Yes. I'm English. You're what right. Did you expect?
Yeah, right. What did you expect?
I can't imagine how you could not, with a short story, like you said, I can't imagine how you could not go that direction.
I have to work backwards on the short story. But I don't do it in the novels, which is why it's an interesting
question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in any way putting my stories in the category of yours, but that is true for me as well.
You have the same experience, though.
Same category.
With short stories, which I think are like 95,000 times harder than novels, I have to go backwards. So
yeah, you have to work back from the end.
My other favorites. Of the 15. I have 15 favorites.
Oh my god, Ellie!
But I love the ones, the pre-Baker Street ones, mm-hmm. where, but you don't take the, method of, like, they're sitting in, no, wait, well, they do. We don't have to, like,
there.
That's what I love about them, is that they're both participating in a mystery that only one of them was there for. And I think those stories. And the ones that happen in the canon that are pre-Watson, that they sit and tell each other stories.
Gloria Scott
is one of my most favorite. That interaction where they actually...
Gloria Scott
it's
and
all,
Musgrave.
It's all Baker Street time, which is what's so lovely about them.
I did that very purposefully. I think that Gloria Scott and Musgrave Ritual are both, some of my... They're up there, my favorites, just because it's like Sherlock Holmes sitting down and like, let me show off for you what I used to do before you were even around.
I've been doing this shit for so long.
And like,
but you should play the game too. Why don't you play with me?
Yeah, and it's like I always thought that aspect of it was really beautiful. So the idea of like Watson giving a case to Sherlock Holmes just to distract him, like specifically, that was the first one I ever wrote, and that is the first one in the.
That's the first one you ever wrote.
That's the first one I ever wrote. Was the Colonel Warburton's Madness. I wrote that in 2009 or something like that.
That's gorgeous.
And I love it because of the fact that Watson's just like, okay, so you're bored. I was confused by this, and I'm going to tell you about it. And Holmes is like, oh
my
god,
I'm going to figure it out.
I'm going to figure it out.
That's brilliant.
That's amazing. And that's going to be so much fun. And then I really enjoyed writing the other ones that where Holmes was like, okay, so
you're sick.
I need to distract you. I need to distract you. So here's a thing.
What can you figure it out?
I'm looking through case files. Whoops, I fell.
Ooh, I dropped this one all over the floor. And now I'm going to read it aloud to you.
Yes, exactly. So
whoopsie. Yeah.
But those are such there are such in character things for them to do.
He's like, I'm going to clean the house. Oh no, all my case files. I'll just put these away. Watson's like, no, don't.
But they would do that for each other, I think. I mean, like, it always has to be clear, I think, in every single case that I write, that the relationship is the most important part. And there's the case, but the relationship is the most important part. And I really, I just enjoy writing about them because they forgive each other and they understand each other. And even when they don't forgive each other and are a little bit angry about, like, whoops, I died.
How dare you?
How dare you?
How very dare you?
Then it's still okay because It's this unconditional loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
And
mythology stories.
I just love that. And so I like exploring every aspect of it.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two to one?